Very different kind of chapter here, not really the kinds of things we've been looking at, but I think some very valuable things to learn, interesting things. Chapter 18, verses 1 to 12.
Jethro, the priest of Midian, Moses' father-in-law, heard all that God had done for Moses and for Israel and his people, how the Lord had brought Israel out of Egypt. Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, took Moses' wife Zipporah after he had sent her away, and her two sons, of whom one was named Gershom. And Moses said, "I have been a sojourner and a foreigner in a foreign land." And the other was named Eliezer, for he said, "The God of my fathers was my help and delivered me from the sword of Pharaoh." Then Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, came with his sons and his wife to Moses in the wilderness where he was camped at the Mount of God. He sent word to Moses, "I, your father-in-law Jethro, am coming to you with your wife and her two sons with her." Then Moses went out to meet his father-in-law, and he bowed down and kissed him, and they asked each other of their welfare and went into the tent. Moses told his father-in-law all that the Lord had done to Pharaoh and to the Egyptians for Israel's sake, all the hardship that had fallen on them on the journey, and how the Lord had delivered them. Jethro rejoiced over all the goodness which the Lord had done to Israel in delivering them from the hand of the Egyptians. So Jethro said, "Blessed be the Lord who delivered you from the hand of the Egyptians and from the hand of Pharaoh, and who delivered the people from under the hand of the Egyptians. Now I know that the Lord is greater than all the gods. Indeed, it was proven when they dealt proudly against the people." Then Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, took a burnt offering and sacrificed it to God, and Aaron came with all the elders of Israel to eat the meal with Moses' father-in-law before God. And it came about the next day.
Okay, so you've got Jethro. That's Moses' father-in-law. Looks like Moses had sent his wife and sons to be with him for a time period. Not sure exactly how long. And Jethro and his daughter and grandsons come to Moses now when he's camped at Mount Sinai. And they meet each other and, you know, go through the normal meeting greetings and so forth. And then, verse 8. What does Moses tell his father-in-law? Everything that God had done to Pharaoh and to the Egyptians, told him about the hardship on the journey and how the Lord had delivered them. Now, there's a number of important points right there. One is, he puts the emphasis where it belongs, on the Lord. Same thing Paul did when he'd come back from the missionary journey in passages like Acts 14:27 and 15:4 and 21:19 and 20. He told about what the Lord had done. He didn't tell about what he'd done. I can imagine being Moses and wanting to tell about all the great things I'd done. You know, look, I did this and I did that. He doesn't do that. He tells what the Lord had done. But I'm impressed with the fact that he tells his father-in-law what the Lord has done. That is an important thing for us to be doing. We are sometimes, I think, too reluctant to talk about the things that the Lord is doing, even the things that the Lord is doing in our lives and in the things around us. That is a part of our work of evangelism. But I'm also impressed, and maybe the point that I would dwell on the most, what do we talk about in our families? You know, I bet most of us got together with some family members in these last week or two. What are we talking about? In fact, what do we talk about, generally speaking? It's encouraging to me, they haven't seen each other in a while, Jethro comes, and I don't know, they may have, you know, talked about how the, you know, Egyptian soccer teams were doing or whatever they had back then. But what we know about is he told him the great things God had done. Isn't that what ought to dominate our thinking and therefore our conversation? And Jethro's impressed. He believes the testimony of Moses, even though he never saw the plagues and the parting of the Red Sea. And as we do, he believed the evidence and praised the Lord. Comments and questions? Mason.
I think part of it is we don't see, we look at, well, of course, he told Jethro what God had done. Nothing like that has ever happened to me. But really, God changing me from the sinner I was and being patient with me still is just as amazing, and that's what I realize. And that's amazing to people, too. People are amazed at that.
Yeah, I believe God's deliverance for us is every bit as amazing as his deliverance in Exodus. Roger.
Look how ridiculous Moses would have looked. He would have been like, man, Jeff, you should have seen what I've done. I lifted up the staff, and people died. I threw dust in the air, and all this stuff came out. This is ridiculous. Which is funny, because that's how we sound sometimes. Like, oh man, you should have seen me done that. And man, I really did work myself into preaching to this person. And look at this person. And we sound ridiculous when we do the same thing. And it wouldn't sound ridiculous.
Good point. Patrick.
The great thing when we do that is it builds faith.
Yes.
To those around us. We see Jethro saying, now I know, you know, about the Lord and his great might. So I think it's not only a benefit to us when we say those things, but it's a benefit to those around us as well.
Amen. Exactly, Roger.
A question that I had about this was, I know because of, you know, the denominational churches, a lot of times we are afraid of talking about, you know, what the Lord is doing in our life, because automatically we assume this is a testimonial and we shouldn't be saying testimonials and things like that. What were your take on some of that and about how to exactly approach some of that? I don't know if
I think we ought to be talking about what the Lord is doing and giving him the praise and credit. I made the qualification, I think, yesterday. Doesn't mean we ought to give the Lord the credit for, you know, finding this woman I can commit adultery with or something like that. We need to be careful that we're not blaming the Lord for our sins. But when the Lord has given blessings, it seems to me like he deserves to be praised and thanked for that, and we ought to be talking about that. Andrew.
I think we see that Moses isn't like the rest of the Israelites and that he hasn't already forgotten what God has done.
Yes, good point. Yeah, they wouldn't have remembered long enough to tell her, would they? Great.
I have a question in verse 12.
Yes.
When it says that Aaron and the elders of Israel ate bread with Moses' father-in-law before God, what is the significance of that?
Yeah, I don't know that I know the answer to that. I don't know if just before God in a general sense or if God's present in some more specific sense. Somebody got a good answer for that. James?
Is it possible that they ate of the sacrifices here in the sense of in the worship to God?
Perhaps. Yeah, it may have been peace offerings that they could have eaten. Michael?
Did you say anything about
Well, they came with Jethro to be reunited with Moses.
So when he went back to Egypt, now we've had an indication that he went and left his own family.
At some point, at least, Zipporah and the boys had gone to be with Jethro. I don't know for sure when, but at some point they have, yes. Other thoughts? Yes.
Would we say from verse 11, Jethro says, now I know that the Lord is greater than all gods. Would that be an implication that maybe Jethro wasn't a priest of God previously?
Maybe, but I don't know that that has to mean any more than, boy, I can really see now. Not that he didn't believe before. We would sometimes say that.
Lord, I believe it. Help me.
Yeah, absolutely. This even proves it more, James.
This naming of the children in verse 3, does that happen when Moses gets back?
No, I think when they were born.
When they were born. Also, would this have been the same son or sons that Zipporah had earlier circumcised?
I assume so.
He said, the God of my father was my help and delivered me from the sword of Pharaoh. Mm-hmm. They were named upon their birth. How would that have been born before?
Well, we know Gershom was named in 2:22. Now, I assume that, you know, his name is the Lord is our help. And he comments that he delivered me from the sword of Pharaoh. There's another illustration of that name. That'd be my approach. Mindy.
What was up with his wife? Like, he came to him? Like, they had been apart? Like,
yeah.
He said he had sent her away. Were they separated? Like, what was the deal there?
Yeah, at some point he'd sent her to her father-in-law. Her father. I don't know why, I don't know when, I don't know if she visited for a little while and they came back, if he sent her on his way to Egypt and she was there the whole time, I really don't know. So.
Two thoughts. One, the deliverance from Pharaoh as far as the name, couldn't that be referring to the same as Hebrews 11:24 when Moses fled from Pharaoh's presence the first time?
I hadn't thought about that. Yeah.
And then also, maybe it's just from coming from the vantage point of already being married, and some of the questions seem odd. If I were going to Pharaoh to do this, I wouldn't want my wife and children tagging along. I'd send them over to my in-laws' house and make sure they were taken care of.
Makes sense to me. I don't think you've found a victim yet, but. All right. That's not the only item on the agenda between Jethro and Moses. We've got another situation here, 13-27.
It came about the next day that Moses set to judge the people, and the people stood about Moses from the morning until the evening. Now when Moses' father-in-law saw that all he was doing for the people, he said, "What is this thing that you are doing for the people? Why do you alone sit as judge, and all the people stand before you this morning until evening?" Moses said to his father-in-law, "Because the people come to me to inquire of God. When they have a dispute, it comes to me, and I judge between a man and his neighbor, and make known the statutes of God and his law." Moses' father-in-law said to him, "The thing that you are doing is not good. You will surely wear out both yourselves and these people who are with you, for the task is too heavy for you, and you cannot do it alone. Now listen to me, I will give you counsel, and God be with you. You be with the people's representative before God, and you bring the disputes to God. Then teach them the statutes and the laws, and make known to them the way in which they are to walk and the work they are to do. Furthermore, you shall select out of all the people able men who fear God, men of truth, those who hate dishonest gain, and you shall place these over them as leaders of thousands and hundreds, fifties and tens. Let them judge the people at all times, and let it be that every major dispute they will bring to you, but every minor dispute they themselves will judge. So it will be easier for you, and they will bear the burden with you. If you do this thing, and God so commands you, then you will be able to endure, and all these people also will go to their place in peace." So Moses listened to his father-in-law and did all that he said. Moses chose able men out of all Israel and made them heads over the people, leaders of thousands, of hundreds, of fifties, and of tens. They judged the people at all times. The difficult dispute they would bring to Moses, but every minor dispute they would themselves would judge. Then Moses bade his father-in-law farewell, and he went his way into his own land.
Yeah, interesting situation here. What did Jethro observe Moses doing? Yeah, working too hard, judging the people, having a way too heavy caseload of people coming to him to get some kind of verdict from God on their disputes and their problems. And, well, what's that creating? Stress, yeah. For Moses, I mean, wow, it's really hard on him. He's got so many people seeking his, you know, arbitration. And even on the people who are weary from having to wait all day to be able to get in to see him. And so he's having a hard time handling the heavy docket of cases that he has. And, you know, Moses' father-in-law sees this. And what does Jethro say? Yeah, this is not a good plan. You know, you'll wear out, the people will. What does he suggest? Yes, split up the workload. You know, teach the statutes and find some really good, honest, capable men. Basically, set up a lower court system. You know, have some guys, do that again, have some guys that you can turn to. You know, the people could turn to preliminarily. And the minor disputes they handle, you don't even have to know about those because you've trained them. They're honest, honorable people. They can judge those. And you just get the major problems that need to be resolved. And that way, you know, it splits up the workload, delegates, you know, to other people who will be able to handle this. Now, I think this is an interesting situation in that, you know, Moses is receiving advice from his non-Jewish father-in-law, even. Now, a believer in God, a priest of God, but not even from the same, you know, nationality. What does Moses do with this advice?
He listens.
Is it a good idea to listen to advice?
Yes.
If it's good advice, yeah. And there are times when it's bad counsel. But Proverbs talks a lot about the value of hearing good advice and paying attention to it. If the advice is correct, it's helpful to us. None of us know everything. You know, we will be much better off listening to other people's counsel than just trying to figure everything out on our own and being so headstrong we don't like anybody else making a suggestion. After all, if we didn't think about it, it must not be a good idea. You know, Moses wasn't like that, thankfully. So he does this, and it actually really helps. It proves to be a good thing. Do you think there's a lesson for us in this? What could we learn from this? Justin?
I think we can definitely take this, and I know that a lot of preachers and elders and some of the, I guess you could say, the stronger Christian in the congregation that have a lot more zeal and are a lot more willing to do things, sometimes get overwhelmed because they are so willing and don't want to say no to things and want to do as much as they possibly can. And that allows a lot of the less stronger Christians in the congregation to kind of sit back on the back burner and just let them do everything. And I think that we can definitely use this example for those people that are overwhelmed. I think that gives them an example of not being afraid to go to people and ask them, hey, can you do this for me? Or kind of split up their workload. And, you know, if a preacher's getting overwhelmed, there's nothing wrong with him going to somebody and saying, hey, can you do these bulletins for me? Or you know, little stuff. You know, it doesn't even, you know, or just, hey, can you come visit these people with me? I mean, there's a lot of stuff that you can get other people involved in that wouldn't necessarily do it on their own. But if somebody asked them specifically to do something, that they could jump in and help too.
All right, so good idea to delegate tasks and not try to do everything ourselves. You agree with that? Is that a positive thing? Can you think of some New Testament passages or principles that might indicate that?
Acts chapter 6.
Acts 6, where they had the problem with the food service for the widows. Do the apostles suggest that they'll start paying more attention to that now? What do they say? And therefore you guys need to get seven good men to put in charge of this. Leaders must not succumb to the temptation to try to do everything themselves. You know, the apostles had important responsibilities. You find seven guys that can give full attention or a lot of attention to this food service issue. You know, Moses didn't have to control all the details of the judicial administration. Let other people be involved, delegate some of the responsibility. What about a passage like Ephesians chapter 4? Ephesians 4 and verse 11, God gave some apostles, some prophets, some evangelists, and some pastors and teachers for the equipping of the saints for the work of service to the building up of the body of Christ. Basically, that's saying God gave leaders among his people to build, to equip us, Christians in general, to work to build up the body. God did not intend that the apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, and teachers do all the work. He intended them to equip other Christians to do the work of building up the body. What God wants is for all the members to be actively involved, not for one man to monopolize. I've just been preaching through Ephesians and suggested that the situation in some churches is like one supervisor in a factory trying to operate all the machines by himself while the 50 employees come to the plant twice a week to hear him lecture on some phase of production. That is not the way to run a factory. And it's not what God intends among his people. He intends for the work of service to be done by the saints who were equipped to do it by those who were leading. Or what about a passage like 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 2? You know this passage, but maybe you didn't think about this aspect of it. The things which you heard from me in the presence of many witnesses, entrust these to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. He doesn't say, Timothy, now the things you heard, you be sure you teach to everybody. He said, you commit these to faithful men who will be able to teach. Instead of trying to, you know, monopolize on the work, we need to be spreading it out and having faithful men. I mean, everybody does everything, but faithful men can take that and teach others. So I think this is an excellent lesson for us, applicable for us in our time as well, that we need to find good people to delegate to struggle for me. I'm not a natural delegator, but I've learned quite a bit. The people in this congregation have been really good for me in that. There's some here who are very concerned that I not try to do everything myself. And, you know, kind of keep a rein on me in that. It's been very helpful, been very good. Because all of us need to work together. It should not be one person doing everything. Comments and thoughts, Ben?
These are the criteria here for these people to be judges. You know, it's not that they have like degrees or be the smartest people. It's just you need to have a good heart. You need to hate dishonest gain. You need to be a person of truth who fears God. And you can do this work. And it's the same way for us. You don't have to have, I heard someone say the other day, we don't need to have all the skill. What we really need is commitment to do the work. And if we're committed to the work, then we're going to do the work, no matter what skill we may or may not have.
Good point. Matt.
I think it's a good passage to use when we're thinking about Hebrews. You think about all the, you know, Moses has said to have this one-on-one relationship with God and people. And below him, there are leaders of thousands and hundreds and fifties and tens. And Hebrews says, we don't have that. We have a personal relationship where each one of us, you know, can go firmly into his throne room. There's none of these levels we have to work on.
Yeah, I'm not sure these were levels of getting to God exactly anyway, more to resolve disputes, but yeah, you're right. Like,
do you think that maybe too much, when Moses didn't mean to, he's putting too much emphasis on himself? Because he says, they come to me, and I decide, and I tell them the statutes. And then Jethro says, well, what you need to do is you need to bring the case to God. I mean, it just seems like maybe it wasn't intended to, but maybe the people put too much emphasis on Moses.
Yeah, who knows? It's an easy thing to drift into before you even realize it. You know, and what makes it hard to delegate?
Trust and control.
Yeah. It's really hard to say, okay, I'm not going to be in control of this anymore. I'm going to give this to somebody else to do. There's various reasons why it's difficult to, you know, feel like that's going to be adequate. And so I think that's sometimes our issue. We have to work on that. We have to see that the principles in the Bible would indicate that God doesn't want one person doing all the work. Other thoughts? Yes, Dave.
Talks about the body in Corinthians.
Yeah. Many members. All the members have a function to help the body to work well. James?
Is this like a judicial system?
Yes, I think so. I think so. Yes, Lainey. Good point. Yeah, God made him a judge over them, and they finally came to realize that. Good point. Yeah. Right.
You know, we need to work diligently in God's service. There's more than just working really hard. We need to work smart, too. You know, we can go out back and try to cut down a tree with a hammer and work really hard at it and maybe eventually get it done. But it'll be much more effective and productive to do it the right way. And so, you know, we need to, if we're just working really hard like Moses was here, it might have been good if he thought about another way where he could use his time and energy more efficiently.
It's really true. I mean, you know, sometimes you may be in a situation where you feel like, well, I can do this better. I mean, I've got more experience. And sometimes it may be true. I mean, because maybe if nobody else has ever done it before, and you have, then you have more experience. Maybe you will do it better. But here's what happens. If other people aren't trained and given responsibilities, they never develop, and they never do it. It's really helpful for me when I lived in Brazil. One of the things that happened is that we started eventually getting so many contacts, we could not possibly follow up on all of them. That was 14 years ago, you know, even then. And so it was essential. There were contacts that either we gave to some other brethren to follow up with, or they wouldn't be followed up with. We couldn't do it all. Because I always kind of, you know, felt like, well, you know, I just don't know if other people will do it well or right. Well, they may not do it as well as would be ideal. They may have to learn just like I have, but how are they going to do that without the opportunity? Somebody had their hand up. Yeah, Pat.
I think it's really important to look at Jesus and what he did with his ministry. Because you see Jesus taking his disciples so often and teaching them while he's teaching them to teach. And I think it's really important to see that because obviously Jesus was able to teach better.
That's exactly right.
He was able to fulfill his ministry much better than what they could. But he still took the time to raise them up to equip them to be able to teach. We need to be doing the same with people around us because if we get to a point where we feel like we're essential, we've done something wrong.
Yeah. Amen. Dave?
I think we see it in the whole study that we've had so far. The work of deliverance was God's. It wasn't Moses.
That's exactly
so
right.
When he tried to do it the first time, it wasn't successful. When he did it, realizing it was the Lord's hand, he was successful.
Good point. Ben?
It might help us to delegate this a little bit more if we thought about it in the sense of a blessing, a gift, just to be able to do it, and not so much about the effect of it. Certainly, the effect is important, but just to be able to work the work of God, that's the whole reason we are met. And I thought Philippians 4, as the New Testament pastor, Paul rejoices and gives to him to be credited to their account. And if we had that perspective on just the work we had, we'd be more anxious to share it with others. And others would see that kind of excitement, they'd be more anxious to share it. And it's a shame that sometimes we have to be asked to do things. But if we can be asked and see what that brings, what a great blessing. Think of how great Moses was honored in our history. And now his honor here is to some extent shared with these others. That we can help watch over Israel.
Good point. Yeah, good thoughts. Ben.
I'm feeling good about moving off to the other challenge. I guess the whole advice thing he took from Jethro, I know for me sometimes it's frustrating. Who do you go to for advice, you know? Because we take like real and say, well, don't go to young people, go to old people. It makes sense, but then you talk to some old people, and there are some old people that don't love God, don't fear God, so it's not just old. But here I think Jethro shows if you go to someone who's older and more experienced, but also someone who, at the end of his advice, really kind of ends it by saying, if God commands you to do this, you know, and we see, you know, that's what we should be seeking out, or older, more experienced people who really put their lives in the hands of God and want us to do that too.
Yeah, that's right. It's certainly appropriate to choose wisely those we listen to. And I think the question is, are they really giving us counsel from God? There were the elders in Jesus' day. They weren't very helpful. You know, so age doesn't always mean wisdom, that's for sure. But I think seeking people who will tell us and teach us the things of God, maybe going against our natural desires, which is to listen to people who will tell us what we want to hear, you know, that's pretty important. You know, one thing I observe sometimes is, you know, if I've got maybe a spiritual problem, who do I feel best about turning to with that problem? Well, kind of counterproductively, it's usually people who have the same problem because I think they'll really understand. Well, they may be really understanding, but if they've not been successful in dealing with it, they're probably not going to be very helpful to me about it. You know, if I've got a drug problem, going to people who are taking drugs all the time for advice is probably not a very good idea. It'd probably be a lot better to go to somebody who's never had the problem or somebody who's overcome it than somebody who's hooked to themselves. And so turning to people who are doing well with what I'm struggling with, who will give me godly advice, even if it's rather painful, I think that those are good principles to try to seek proper counsel. Other thoughts? Yeah.
Like y'all, Moses' father-in-law was saying that to help in, not him all doing the work, like the same members to help, you know, one person can't just do all the work. Like at our church, my dad is the preacher of St. James Church of Christ. He like preaches every Sunday, and every fifth week of the month, I think, is that he takes a break and other members can fill in, and that's really hard. But how we can if we fill in when to help the preachers, that's how we can really be helpful servants of God.
Okay. Other thoughts? All right, and chapter 19, we really kind of waited a while.